Well, I think now with the type of athlete that you're dealing with, the way they're wired, I think you just got to have more one-on-one conversations with them. You know, it can be off to the side at practice, it can be in your office, but you really have to get inside that head a little bit and make them open up, because they're just so used to being behind a cell phone and, you know, either texting or Snapchatting or whatever they're doing. There's not a lot of, you know, one-on-one conversations in their life, to be honest with you. That's important, I think, for you to get to know them, to get them to open up to, you know, what they're feeling, whether it be in their swing, whether it be emotionally. I mean, there's a lot of things that go on in those heads these days. So I think that's probably the number one thing that I do now that I probably didn't do 10, 15 years ago.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, welcome back to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, your home for certified audio gold. Now, thanks for clicking into this show and letting us hang out with you inside those earbuds and coming through loud and clear through your car speakers, guys. These shows are for anyone out there that's looking to improve themselves as a coach. You want to connect with the very best baseball minds in the game, so you can learn from their experiences. You can bring those back to your program and you can keep moving forward. And here's the good news. You're in great company with thousands of other loyal listeners around the world. And we appreciate each and every one of you for clicking into our podcast. Now make sure you're adhering to the three golden words in the podcast world. We're talking about subscribe, review, and share. Hit subscribe on your phone, your tablet, or your computer. That way, every Tuesday, you can get your mind right for more audio gold. Leave us a review on there. It's a small gesture that just by hitting the 5-star rating, plus maybe a few words of encouragement or your thoughts on a particular show or just the pod in general, it all helps more folks find this show. Then, of course, share. Send out the link to the show, tweet about it, blog about it, make a nice Facebook post about how much you love the show, and send your followers, local coaches, even your players to wherever podcasts are free so that way they can find us. Thanks again, guys, for the love, and we appreciate the help. Now, I can sum up today's episode with one word, and I'm even going to spell it out for you. W-I-N-N-E-R. That's it. Intro done, right? Wrap it up. Let's get to the show. I mean, that's all we need to describe this week's guest, Cliff Godwin, the skipper over at East Carolina University, and it's truly hard to argue against that. I mean, this guy just wins, and it's at every stop along the way. And this was just an awesome interview to be on the other end of the line for, as the blue-collar approach and the humble tone that Cliff coaches with, that actually comes through over the airwaves, and we uncover some of the terrific lessons he's learned growing up that still seem to show up in his actions as he leads the Pirates Baseball Club. Now, we walk down his resume, reflecting on each stop and the beyond impressive list of exceptional baseball men that Coach Godwin's been able to learn under during his time as an assistant, and that has certainly helped mold him into becoming the leader he is today there at ECU, a place that holds a soft spot for him, as that is his alma mater. A dugout chatter episode that helps us shine a positive light on the endless list of tremendous baseball folks that are inside the ABCA. And with Cliff, we get to spotlight a 15-year continuous member and a true steward of baseball and a leader of men. So proud to connect with Cliff and welcome him into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Get ready, coaches, because this great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for dialing into the podcast today. We've got a terrific guest on deck, a guy that I've admired from a distance for such a long time, and I think he's got some real value that we can bring to the airwaves and to our Dugout Chatter episode. We're going to be talking with the head coach at East Carolina University, Cliff Godwin. Cliff, thanks for jumping on the call with us.
Sheets, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we're excited to get you on. I know this is another episode with a ton of energy is going to be on the line, so I did bring the fire extinguisher in just in case things get a little out of hand. But I'm so excited, man, because, again, I've watched your career. I've watched you move, and I'm so excited to see what you're doing there at ECU. But for where we sit here at ABCA here in the national office, you are a 15-year continuous member. So apparently the ABCA means something special to you. And if you could, for our listeners, just open up exactly what that is.
Well, Sheets, first off, you make me feel a little old when you said 15 years. I was like, really, that long?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess it has been that long. I actually turned 40 on Friday, so I guess I am getting a little bit old.
Oh, baby,
but
yeah.
I have to credit Coach Scaff, when I was at UNC Wilmington, to get me involved, and we went to the coaches' convention, and from day one, I just saw a tremendous value of what the organization brought to all of college coaches. And you know, I think it's a great way to network, obviously, but I think it's a great way to learn. And really, going to the coaches' convention is about learning, in my opinion, and, you know, getting to meet new coaches and new ideas. And I just have been very fortunate to be a part of that.
That's outstanding. You know, your career in baseball and your stops along the way and the men that you've had the opportunity to work for, you know, it is the who's who of inside college baseball. And if you could, just for our listeners, just to give them some kind of context, walk them through your career of playing at ECU, playing pro for a couple years, and like you mentioned, jumping on staff there at Wilmington, and how things have just, you know, really fell into place from that point.
Well, kind of going back into my childhood years, I grew up in a small town, Snow Hill, which is like 25 minutes from Greenville, and I always told my mom I'd never go to East Carolina because it was too close to home, and I felt like she'd be in my dorm room every weekend, and like most kids, you eat those words, and it was the best decision of my life back in the spring of 96 to choose to come to East Carolina, because every experience I had as a player and now as a coach stems back to that decision, which obviously I didn't know that at the time, but it does. And I played for a great guy, Keith LeClair, who's no longer with us and passed away with Lou Gehrig's disease. But a lot of, you know, things that I still do today go back to learning from Coach LeClair. Finished up, you know, your career comes to a screeching halt when, you know, you lose in the Super Regional in 2001, and we were the 7th national seed. We were the only national seed not to go to Omaha that year, and I made the last out. I was the tying run at the plate and had a 1-0 count, and it was a changeup, and I was sitting on a changeup, and I just missed it. I was a home run hitter, so I was trying to hit one out of the park because I knew we needed it to tie the game. And so I played a couple years of independent ball, finished up my master's degree, and then actually started my coaching career at Kinston High School for one spring in the spring of 2003. And then after that spring, Coach Mark Scaff called me, asked me would I be interested in the volunteer assistant job. And I said, of course. He says, well, look, we're not going to pay you any money. And I was like, I want to get into college coaching, and that's what it's all about. And, you know, one thing I'd like to tell all young coaches who are getting into profession, I made $8,000 for the entire year in the summer of 2003 to the summer of 2004, and I never thought about the money because I was doing what I loved. And that summer, Tim Corbin was at the East Coast Professional Showcase, which was at the UNC Wilmington campus, and he saw this guy that was, you know, working on the field, doing laundry, you know, looked like he was, you know, doing, you know, landscaping, probably how dirty I was, and then I was going back and trying to, you know, take notes. I had no idea what I was doing at the time. I was trying to take notes on these players. And Eric Backage, who played with me at East Carolina, was Tim's assistant. And so we were standing next to each other. And Corbs asked, you know, Eric, you know, who's that guy? You know, how do you know him? And the rest is kind of history. But, you know, I always tell our players, you're always making an impression. And I think I made a good impression in front of Tim Corbin of the way I was working. And he offered me the director of baseball operations position at Vandy. And that was a great year for me because I really didn't know what went on behind the scenes to run a successful, high-level Division I college baseball program, and I was kind of Corbs' right-hand man. So, you know, that year was just a great learning experience for me. And that summer, I was offered the, you know, hitting coach and catching coaching job at Notre Dame with Paul Maneri. So I worked at Notre Dame for a year. We went to a regional. We won the conference, and Coach Maneri got offered the head coaching position at LSU. So we all went down to LSU and, you know, went down there and were able to go to Omaha in 2008, won 23 games in a row, swept the last four weekends in the SEC and got a national seed. And that summer, Terry Rooney was offered the head coaching job at UCF. I went with him there for 3 years. We went to a regional my last year there. And then, Mike Bianco came calling. And I really wasn't looking to leave. And, once I stepped foot back on Ole Miss's campus and just remembered when we played there when I was at LSU, and there was 11,000 people there. It's a small town. It's a college town. It's a country town, kind of like where I'm from in Eastern North Carolina. I just fell in love with the place and, you know, spent 3 years there. And we went to Omaha in 14. I think it was the first time in 42 years, and it was just a great experience. And I'm just so happy that Coach B could get there. And then I was offered the head coaching position at East Carolina.
Feel good to come home, didn't it?
It did. It did. I wanted to come home, though, and a lot of people thought, you know, I would just take the job to come home. And my mom gets mad at me when I say this all the time, but, you know, I really separated the professional things I had done and the heart feelings I had for this place. And when they interviewed me, I mean, it was important to me that East Carolina wanted to compete at the highest level. They were going to fund us like that to compete for a national championship. And they interviewed me in Omaha in 14, and I didn't even tell my mom or dad I was interviewing for the job. So they were both in Omaha and had no idea I was interviewing for the job. So that was how close to the best I kept it, just because I wanted to make sure, you know, we could come here and win at a high level.
That's right. Well, I will get back to that here in a little bit, but your press conference was one that I pulled up and I watched from start to finish when you got the job, because I did know how much it meant from a distance, you coming back to ECU. And it was a very powerful press conference, and it was an emotional day for you. And we're going to come back to that. But what I want to do is go back to each spot that you've been at. Like we referenced earlier, man, you've worked under some terrific baseball men, some Hall of Famers, and guys that are, you know, obviously very involved with what we do here at ABCA. But there are certainly lessons that you could probably pinpoint at each and every spot that over time have, one, changed your perspective, but two, have given you lessons that you walked right into ECU knowing, hey, I'm not going to do it that way because I've seen that fail, or I learned that if you do it this way, it really gets you a chance to move ahead a few years. Can you go spot by spot and kind of really pull back the curtain on that for our listeners?
I can. You know, Coach Scaff, you know, he recruited me out of high school, and, you know, Coach Scaff is just a tremendous guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a great coach. He's a baseball guy, but he treats everybody the same. It doesn't matter if you're a high-level recruit, if you're, you know, the person who picks up the trash at the stadium, he treats everybody the same. And, you know, I think that gets lost in our business a lot. And I've really tried to model myself after Coach Scaff when it comes to that, because at the end of the day, you want to treat people how, you know, you want to be treated. And that's, I think, right. He does an unbelievable job at that. Corbs, you know, I had never seen somebody work like that guy. You know, he was, you know, in the office, I don't know, 4 o'clock. He was in the office before I ever got there, and I was getting there at like 6 a.m., and he would give me a hard time, but, oh, you slept in this morning, huh? And, but it was fun. The thing that I got from him was this guy who worked extremely hard, and I feel like he works as hard as anybody in the country. Yeah. He made it fun for the people that worked there, and he made it fun for the kids. And I use the word fun loosely, because, or not so loosely, because I feel like sometimes they think it's like recess. It's not recess, but the kids enjoyed what they were doing.
Sure.
And he really taught me how to run a program, from, you know, fundraising to dealing with the administration to travel, you know, team meals. Like, I mean, I was doing all that stuff, and, you know, I really owe a lot to him on that aspect. Obviously, I learned baseball, but the stuff behind the scenes was really eye-opening to me. The next guy, Paul Maneri, you know, Coach Maneri is, you know, a tremendous guy as well. Just, you know, being the CEO of the LSU baseball program, more so than Notre Dame, you know, there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
And the way he handled all the different people that he dealt with, from the media to the administration to the kids. And then also his in-game decisions. I think Coach Maneri has, you know, one of the best instincts of when to put a pitcher in, when to take him out. And he really knows his personnel, and he puts those guys into really specific roles. And that's why I think he's been successful at a very high level. Up until that point, I had been recruiting. But when I went to UCF, and Terry and I went to UCF, I mean, Terry is a tremendous recruiter. But when you're dropped off into a state, myself, a state of Florida, which you've never lived in, you don't know anything about, you're not very good at the time, you're competing against a lot of Florida schools, that's really where I learned how to recruit, in my opinion, because no offense to LSU, you go look at the best player and say, hey, I want you to come to LSU, and a lot of times they come to LSU.
Sure.
So you don't get told no a lot I think, you know, having to persevere through a lot of no's and just figuring it out, you know, recruiting wise. And then the connections that I made down there have, with travel coaches and high school coaches, still help us today here in East Carolina. We have Florida kids on our roster. So Terry really helped me with that. And then, you know, Coach Bianco, you know, really he comes off the Skip Berkman tree, so to speak, and just having a system. And he would always say, like, whatever you can have whatever system you want, but it has to be a system and a systematic way of doing things. And, you know, I really took that away. Like he would always say, we can do anything, but we can't do everything. And I always took that to heart when I got here, is we want to make sure that we're good at what we want to be good at, and we're not spreading ourselves so thin that we're not good at anything. And then the last thing that he told me before I took the job, which really helped us out in the first year, he said, make sure you take all those kids that are on that roster and you tell them that they're your kids. Mm-hmm. Because if you tell them that you didn't recruit them, because they won't play hard for you, and you have no chance of winning. And I took that advice, and we won 40 games our first year with not the best talent, and won a conference tournament championship. And I really owe a lot to Coach Bianco for telling me that.
That is powerful stuff, which walks right into what's going on there at ECU. And I think one of the cool dynamics, and I really want you to open this up, is using the Pirates and P-I-R-A-T-E-S. I want you to open that up because I think that's really going to open up for our guys paying attention to this. What's really happening inside that culture that's going to walk us into all the extra stuff you're doing? Can you open that up for our guys?
Yeah, I can open it up. First off, it has to go back, and Brian Kane, who I met at Ole Miss, who's a peak performance coach and works on the mental game, he helped me out with that. But I wanted to have something that when I showed up on campus for a press conference to say, this is who we're going to be about. That's and now right. It's evolved and it's become more detailed and everything, but we wanted to have a culture, a foundation, a stamp of what we're about. And P stands for purpose. We want to have a plan for everything we do and a reason why we do it. And all of these is not just baseball-wise. It's academics. It's in the community. I is integrity. You know, true integrity is doing what is right when no one's watching. It's easy to have integrity when you're with your coach or you're with your parents, but you know, what are you doing when no one's watching? R is responsible. You have the power to choose your response in any situation, nobody else. We want to make sure that we can control our emotions, especially on the field, but also off the field. A is attitude. We like guys who are energy givers. We don't like energy vampires, yep, so to speak. T is toughness. The ability to embrace adversity and keep moving forward. And what we talk about in our program is baseball is a game of failure, and you know, you have to be able to embrace it and keep moving forward. And that's life, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. E is excellence. Live a lifestyle to be great. It's not a light switch. So every morning you have to wake up and want to live a lifestyle of excellence. And then the last one, which is probably the hardest one, because society and human nature just don't want you to do this, is S is selfless. Mm-hmm. And we tell our guys to put we over me, execute your role for the team, not necessarily accept it. And what that means is everybody who comes in that we recruit wants to pitch on Friday night and hit in the three hole.
Right.
Well, if they're freshman year, if they're hitting in the seven hole, I want them to be the best seven hole hitter in the country. Yeah. And then every single day between games, you know, work their tails off to be that three hole hitter. And what will happen is either you're going to make everybody in front of you better, or you're going to soon move up to six, move up to five, move up to four, and then, you know, hopefully, you know, move into that three hole. And that's what we really try to stress to our guys.
That's so good, man. Thanks for unpacking that.
Hey, Sheets, by the way, I didn't read that. That's in my head.
Oh, I know that. Trust me, that's exactly why I could tee. I know that for a fact because you live that, because you do, man. And that's when I go back to that press conference, it was so funny. I kind of got chill bumps because I'm sitting there going, I've watched that, and you rolled it right out. You already had a plan in place. This is who we're going to be. Which walks right into year four. How far down that culture line are you? Or is it every guy's on board and it's just like you're just feeding this machine now at this point?
I think this is the first year I can kind of really say that every guy's on board.
There
and
you
it's
go.
Not an easy process.
No.
I mean, last year we didn't have everybody on board, and we were preseason, you know, I think seventh in the country, you know, or
yeah.
something. And
yeah.
we did have some injuries, but I didn't do a good enough job continue to develop our culture. And this year, and backtracking to last year, we lost in the conference tournament championship game last year, and that's the best thing that's happened to East Carolina baseball since I've been here. Mm. And the reason I say that is because winning hides problems. Winning hides, you know, kinks in the armor, so to speak. And once that happens, then you sit and look in the mirror and you go, hey, what do we need to do to get better? And it's made me better. It's made our assistant coaches better. It's made our players better. We've had so many more one-on-one conversations with our kids. And, you know, we made a 3.52 team GPA this fall.
Yeah.
35 out of 35 guys had higher than a 3.12. If you don't have everybody bought in, there's no way that you can do that.
Oh, that's powerful. Yeah, I'm coming back to that because I know academics are huge. I know community service is huge for what you guys do with the Pirates. Can I go back to a moment real quick? Because I want to be insensitive to this, but when you reference that you didn't do a good enough job coaching that team, that's come up two or three times across the many episodes that we've had. And I think there's a real vulnerable moment there. There's a real personal growth moment, not only for you, but also anybody paying attention to this. Because I think too often, Cliff, this is so easy to do as a former coach. This is so easy to say, you know, that team just didn't come together. It was kind of on them, had a few turds, just didn't work out, as opposed to going, you know what, I'm the guy running this ship. I'm the captain. I need to own this. But more importantly, I need to learn from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, first off, it's how I raised. But, you know, in this day and age, people want to point the fingers. At the end of the day, I am. It starts at the top, and it's my fault. I mean, it is. It's my fault because I didn't recognize some of the signals that I got. And, you know, I probably said, hey, we were hurt, you know, at times during the season. And, you know, we lost two of our Friday night starters. But at the end of the day, I'm the leader. And I own what happened last year. And that allows you to grow within your organization when you can accept responsibility. People that don't accept responsibility for what goes wrong, in my opinion, are not true leaders. And if you're a true leader and you're at the top, then it's your job to help everybody underneath you get onto the culture that you're looking for or the plan that you're looking to execute. And like I said, it's made me better. This has been the most fun team for me to coach, the one that we got right now. And I think it's a lot has to do with actually losing last year and helping our guys become better people, investing more in their teammates. And it's just been fun to watch us grow so far.
That's so cool. You know, a quote that came out of one of our past shows from Stu Fritz from Hope College was, I think players need to see us when we're at our best, because that's what they signed up for, but they need to see us when we're at our worst. And being vulnerable around your players isn't a bad thing because it's teaching them a lot more than we can probably give credit for. So thank you for opening that up for our guys. I want to move into this academic element and the community service element because you're doing so much more for that department, not only your program, but that department, that university, and the community of Greenville. I know that you're very proud of that. Can you unpack that for our guys?
You know, you have a vision to start with, and, you know, our first vision academically was to make a 3.0 as a team. And that first fall, we made a 3.05, and at that time, it was the highest recorded baseball GPA ever at ECU. And, you know, you're thinking like, man, you know, we did something good, and we were proud of that because that was, you know, a goal of ours. And then you fast forward to the next fall, and we got a 3.42, and I was like, man, we got to set this goal a little bit higher because, hey, 3.0 is, you know, too easy. And just to see the guys just continue to, you know, make that a priority. And look, at the end of the day, I don't know how many guys on our team are going to play in the big leagues, but I know that their education is always going to be there. Mm-hmm. I'm so fortunate that my parents pushed me academically where, you know, I got a great education and 2 degrees from East Carolina. But I want our guys to be proud of their education when they walk out the door. So that's been very important. We've led the American Athletic Conference the past 2 seasons in baseball GPA, which is important to me. Mm-hmm. In the community, I think it's important to give back. I don't care where you're at, it's important to give back because people who have the ability to give back to the community, whether it's financially, whether it's in service, whether it's to put smiles on kids' faces, I think it's important because I want to help people, and I think that's how everybody in the world should be. So we visit the Children's Hospital. We helped with sandbags 2 falls ago when we had a hurricane come through here. You know, we do a turkey-like packing. we do all sorts of stuff. We do a mustache march, which is pretty cool, to raise money for ALS. And yep. I hate wearing a mustache, but it's for a great cause. So in the month of March, when I look like the weird old guy with a mustache, that's why. And it's just, it's something fun that we can do, and the community rallies around it. But all those things are important to me because, look, Greenville's been good to me. East Carolina's been good to me. But it wouldn't matter if we were in Greenville or if we were in North Dakota. I would try to do whatever I could to help out.
I know we still got a couple more months to really see this, guys, but follow social media. Cliff, you do work through a great mustache. I mean, you're a 5 o'clock shadow guy, so I'm looking forward to the end of March and seeing what you come up with. Do us a favor. Let's go back to your early years. I think there's some power to be gained from this for anyone paying attention. There's just that strength and vulnerability I want to stay on. But early in your coaching career, can you really pinpoint what then motivated you to coach and then how that's really progressed over the years to what's motivating you right now as you sit in the chair at ECU?
I think early in my career it was winning. That was what motivated me. And I'm not saying that's the right thing anymore, but that was what I just wanted to win. I wanted to make our guys better because I wanted to win on game day. Yeah. I would do, you know, when I say do whatever, not outside the integrity of the rules, but, you know, I would push our guys, and it was, you know, I want to make these guys better. It was winning. Obviously, it was not financially. I think a good point for younger coaches is, look, if you love doing what you do, then the money doesn't matter. If you want to be rich, I make a great salary now, but I made $8,000 my first year of coaching. I made $12,500 my second year of coaching. I didn't get out of debt until I was an assistant coach at LSU. You don't get into it for the money. You get into it because you're affecting kids' lives in a positive way. But back to me, it was winning early. Now it's to really have relationships with the players and develop them as people. Mm. The baseball side of it today, in my opinion, is second, because these kids are getting, in my opinion, somewhat corrupted with all the social media that's out there. So we really have to develop them from the inside out and help them be better people. And if you do that, then they're going to work on their swing. They're going to work on their pitching mechanics. They're going to work on fielding ground balls. But it, to me, it's about the relationships and about, you know, when these kids walk out of here, they've had a great experience at East Carolina. We're going to win games because of the people that we have within our organization.
Sure.
And so that's the most important thing to me now.
That's really, really good. Thanks for opening that up for our guys. I think there really is some powerful stuff to be taken from it. You know, there's something inside of what I'm hearing and what I know, and I probably know too much, but what I'm hearing, and I think our listeners are hearing, Cliff, is that you're a lifelong learner. I'm going to classify you in that group. And that's what we try to really accentuate on these podcasts, is we want guys that we know at their core, they're constantly thinking through things. They're not just getting stuck in what they taught 5 years ago. They're challenging that each and every day. So I guess for our listeners, how are you really challenging yourself every time you put on the uniform? How are you still growing? How are you still learning? Take us inside that process.
Well, I think first and foremost, I, you know, talk to people that are within our profession that are, you know, mentors to me, whether it be, you know, Tim Corbin, Kevin McMullen, mm-hmm. McMullen at UVA, who coached me at East Carolina, guys in the profession, you know, from Coach Bianco, Paul Maneri, my best friends with Eric Backage, Nick Schnabel, Bryant Ward, you know, Scott Jackson, Carl Lafferty, all those guys. I mean, we talk baseball, you know, and talk about recruiting and talk about those things. So that always sparks, you know, different ideas because everybody's doing stuff different way.
Sure.
I listen to audiobooks about leadership, and not that I take everything from it, but, you know, I think it's important to continue to make myself better when I'm leading a group of people. Mm. But those are the things that you have to do, I think, kind of periodically throughout, whether it be once a week or, you know, twice a month, you have to do something. But I think I learn every day when I go out to the field, because it seems like, you know, you see something differently where, you know, your guy's swinging a little bit differently or he's pitching a little bit differently, and it sparks an idea, and I just write it down on my practice sheet, and I sit back and think about it and go, hey, how can we implement this in practice and become better at it?
That's really good. That's going to take us down a different path, but I want to open up daily habits and routines. Are there things that you do each and every day that really accentuate that, but at the same time, go into those books, go into some of those audio books or other resources or podcasts that you would offer, because that's always a hot button topic for our coaches is they want more. They want to know what the best of the best are listening to and doing. What would you share?
First thing, I do have a routine. I think any successful person has to have a routine, and whatever the routine is, if it's consistent, I think you can get where you want to go. So I get up early. You know, I think that's important to me. If not, I get stressed out. So it's important to me to get up early, come in the office before anybody else is in here, knock out emails, look at social media, tweet out whatever I'm going to tweet out that day. And then I'm going to go work out around 7 a.m. And then I'm going to be back in the office before or right around when everybody else gets here. And that's kind of starts my day. It makes me feel good about myself. Books, the top five books for me, The Energy Bus by John Gordon, The No Complaining Rule by John Gordon, The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy, Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willett, Toughness by Jay Billis, and then an East Carolina book, Coaching Third, which is the Keith LeClair story, which is by Bethany Bratcher. So those are my go-tos that I can flip back at any point in time. And Legacy is also another good one that I've recently listened to. So.
That's awesome. Appreciate you sharing those. I want to go back. You talked about writing some stuff down on a practice plan. And is there something that maybe you learned or saw at practice that you specifically can call out right now for our guys? And this is just to accentuate the point that any day at the ballpark is an opportunity to learn. And I think more coaches maybe should open their minds to that is really view things differently, see it through a different lens sometimes, and you'll adjust and you'll tweak and you'll plan accordingly. Is there something that maybe you learned that maybe you'll change or have already changed inside the program?
Well, I think now with the type of athlete that you're dealing with, the way they're wired, I think you just got to have more one-on-one conversations with them. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be off to the side at practice, it could be in your office, but you really have to get inside that head a little bit and make them open up, because they're just so used to being behind a cell phone and, you know, either texting or, you know, Snapchatting or whatever they're doing. There's not a lot of, you know, one-on-one conversations in their life, to be honest with you. So that's important, I think, for you to get to know them, to get them to open up to, you know, what they're feeling, whether it be in their swing, whether it be emotionally. I mean, there's a lot of things that go on in those heads these days. So I think that's probably the number one thing I would do. You know, that I do now that I probably didn't do 10, 15 years ago.
There you go. Now pull back the curtain on yourself right here, okay? Now, there's some awesome things that have come from this question. That's why I always ask it. But hidden talents or hobbies? Like, please tell me there's a trombone in the corner of your office. Give me something here.
Hidden talents, when I was young, I was a good football and basketball player, but the body does not allow that. I'm really, my friends would joke at me and say, you're just good at the big three, football, basketball, and baseball. I'm terrible at golf. I'm awful at ping pong. I'm awful at pool. Anything that is outside of those, I'm just not very good at athletically.
Is there any?
And I don't have any music. I don't have any musical instruments in.
Come on.
No, I'm sorry. Never did that. I actually tap danced as a kid. My mom made me for 2 years. I think I was 5 and 6 years old. I was a tap dancer.
See?
So there's a little vulnerability for you.
That's the audio gold we were looking for. Now, here's what I need. I need mom to send over a video. We'll put that on social media. You talk about the vulnerable moment, Cliff. No, I won't push you down that far. What about hobbies? Are there things that excite you outside of coaching? I know it's such a 24/7 position.
I like working out.
There you go.
I like working out religiously because it makes me feel better.
There it is. Okay. Keep staying on this theme here, but there's some value to be gained. The most humbling moment in coaching, what was a moment that you can really pinpoint that is the one that really is seared in your memory that keeps you grounded and puts things back in perspective for you?
My first year at UCF. You know, coming off a Omaha run at LSU and kind of being at the top of, you know, college baseball, and then going to UCF, which was a rebuilding process. And our first year, I don't know if I've ever got beaten like we got beat at times. And one game was the Friday night game at East Carolina, and that was the year they went to a Super Regional in 2009. And they beat us at East Carolina like 28-3. I'm coaching third base for the other team. That was probably the most humbling moment for me, because I walked out of there. It was like, you know, I'm personally embarrassed because this is my alma mater. But fast forward 2 years after that, and we actually beat them for the first time. UCF had never beat East Carolina, and so we beat them for the first time 2 years later, which, you know, I go back to that. I tell our guys all the time, hard work guarantees you success. It just doesn't guarantee you success tomorrow. It doesn't guarantee you success a year from now. But if you keep doing it and you stay consistent with it, then it will guarantee you success at some point in time.
That's awesome. Appreciate that. Funniest stories over the years. I love this question. Whether it's on a bus, in a hotel, at practice, what are some of the funny stories you'd offer to our guys?
I think it was my first year at Ole Miss. We were playing Georgia on ESPN, the Thursday night game, and they had at the time – turf, you know, kind of around the halo, but it went up the third base line and then it became grass. And I was coaching third base and sending a runner and backpedaling and just totally wiped out on national television. So I'm sure you could pull that up somewhere, but I got so many texts after the game, which I was a little bit pissed off because we lost, and they were giving me a hard time because I was a bad athlete, you know, coaching third base.
Maybe I'll try to dig that one up. Maybe, all right, I'll sacrifice tap dancing if I can find the one of you backpedaling and flopping. I can probably, I can sacrifice that. Now, this is, I know one of these people, and I'm really excited to have you talk about Coach LeClaire. But when we talk about the personal Mount Rushmore, we're looking for the three or four people that impacted you the most, that when it's all said and done, man, those are the people that you exalt and you put up on a pedestal. Who would those three or four people be?
Well, I'd have to go back. My grandfather, who was a tobacco farmer. I mean, you talk about work ethic and being blue collar. I mean, he was, you know, the summers I worked in the tobacco fields, and especially where I am today, I'm not smarter than anybody else. I just feel like I've been consistent at my work ethic. And I think it goes back to him at an early age. I would say Coach LeClaire, definitely, you know, Coach LeClaire, the values he, you know, instilled in his players and the group of guys that I played with. I mean, I named them a second ago, but Eric Backich, who's the head coach at Michigan, Nick Schnabel, who's the assistant, Bryant Ward, he's the assistant at UCLA, Clayton McCullough is the minor league field coordinator for the Los Angeles Dodgers, Joe Hastings, a scout with the Rays. I mean, in the list goes. I mean, Coach LeClaire only coached here for 5 years. You're talking about guys that, you know, all played for him, that got into baseball, and a lot had to do with him. I definitely would say that the guys, you know, Coach Scaff, Tim Corbin, Paul Maneri, Mike Bianco. I mean, those guys have been tremendous influences in my life. They gave me an opportunity. They taught me a lot when I was there, and I will always be, you know, indebted to those guys.
Last question I got for you, Cliff. I know you got a busy day. You got a ton that you're walking into this afternoon, but you've offered some tidbits here and there, which is really cool. It gives us some extra value inside the show. But what else do you have? What's the best advice that you've been given over the course of your career? If you could pinpoint down to one specific piece of advice, but then also what other advice do you have for coaches that are paying attention to this, whether they're young coaches or experienced coaches? What else would you offer from where you sit?
The first thing, and it's really just stuck out in my mind recently, but treat other people like you want to be treated, no matter who they are. Mm-hmm. And that goes for everybody. I think the world did that we'd live in a better place. The thing for coaches, and it's back to what I was talking about when I worked at UNC Wilmington and Vanderbilt and wasn't making money, is if this is the profession you want to go into, work your tail off, be loyal as you can be. I mean, be the most loyal person you can be to the head coach. You're not always going to agree with him, but be loyal to him. Paul Maneri told me that when he interviewed me, and at the time I didn't understand it. I understand it a lot now. But work as hard as you can for that person. Be loyal to them, because then they'll be loyal to you. But you have to keep your head down and just work. You might not get the job you're looking for, you know, day one, year two, but if you keep your head down and work, somebody will notice and somebody will give you an opportunity. But everybody, it's just like society. They want the fast track. Like, where's the pill that I can take and be the head coach at LSU? Well, sure. There's no pill, buddy. Yeah. Like, you have to consistently work hard, and you have to treat people like you want to be treated. And if you do that, I think you can do whatever you want to in life.
Powerful stuff, man. Gosh, I'm so thankful we can carve this time out and get you on the podcast, man. We're just so thankful we've got guys like you out there inside the ABCA and what you're doing at ECU. You know, you're not too far away from Greensboro, so there's a good shot. I'm going to figure out how to try to get down there this spring and come see you in person and catch a game. But just keep doing what you're doing, man. We appreciate you jumping on with us, and we wish you and the Pirates the best of luck, Cliff.
Chief, thanks for having me, and you're always welcome in Greensboro.
Thanks, my friend.
Thanks again for checking out this show. And if you're interested in more certified audio gold, make sure you subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever podcasts are free. You can also head over to abca.org/podcast and scroll through all of our shows. And as always, coaches, thank you for listening in and staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Until next week, we ask you to keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging yourself inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.